91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Stand by, we're at your service this afternoon with our recurrent pet health and care program. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. Not only has hurricane season arrived, but the thunderstorms will soon be a most everyday occurrence in South Florida. Thunderous electrical storms particularly provoke anxiety in dogs. Think about giving them a cozy, quieting shelter, perhaps a closet. We'll be taking all sorts of pet care calls with veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke, who heads the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall, as well as dog trainer and behaviorist Adele Miedes. He operates Canine Advisors. If your pet is considered family, please stay tuned. Topical Currents at your service after the news.
The WLRN mobile app is here. Search WLRN in the Apple App Store. You'll have unlimited access to WLRN radio, live broadcasts, news stories, features, and more. The WLRN mobile app is free and available now on your Apple device.
And we're back on this Tuesday afternoon. We're at your service with you today. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Bonnie's a big-time cat enthusiast.
Well, dog, cat.
One time you had five. I used to call that the Wild Kingdom up there in your apartment.
But you would have never known it.
Right. Well, we're taking questions about those pets you dearly love.
And with us is veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke, who heads the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall.
Also with us is dog trainer and behaviorist Adele Miedes. He runs the Canine Advisor Service with dog advice for humans.
And cat advice. Besides pet health and care questions today, we focus on our South Florida hurricane and rainy seasons and how to best keep your animals from anxiety and stress. If you have a question, our email is radio@WLRN.org.
And also, of course, telephone 800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Our lines are now wide open.
So welcome.
Hello.
Gentlemen.
Always glad to
Thank
be here.
Thank you for having us.
Good to have you. So we'll get to the hurricane preparedness. We'll get to the 4th of July. We'll get to all that. But let's talk about those daily thunderstorms that usually roll in and the anxiety they can cause. Beginning with cats, why do cats have so much less trouble with thunder and those storms than dogs?
Well, I think a lot of it is that cats are solitary creatures. The only pack cat out there is the lion. And even then, it's a complex society. Cats are much more self-reliant. They're much more able to self-soothe than dogs are. Dogs are pack animals. They're used to being in large groups. Being part of a family home is actually a little strange for them because a lot of people have one or two dogs, so they don't have a pack to surround themselves with a cloak of security. The cats, though, can still have problems with storms. The only thing is that instead of doing what dogs do, panting, drooling, shaking, losing their appetite, vocalizing or tearing things apart, cats will often just disappear. My mother-in-law's cat would always disappear when I was in town. I assumed it was stress.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting.
So when a storm comes, you might find your cat just disappears, and you're not noticing any signs of stress because cats nowhere to be seen. What cats will do is they'll find somewhere comfortable and warm and close to burrow into, cuddle into, and they'll actually self-soothe that way. But even then, if you find that your cat is manifesting signs of stress, and a cat can be over-grooming, where they start obsessively licking themselves in a generalized area with actually no real sign of irritation to the skin. They're just obsessively grooming and grooming and grooming and grooming. That's one way you'll see a cat manifest stress. And a lot of the time, a cat won't even show you that. You'll just notice a lot more hairballs where they're bringing up swallowed hair because they've been over-grooming.
Right.
And for cats, there is actually out there various synthetic pheromones that will make a cat feel more comfortable.
Oh, the Fellaway.
Yeah. So So don't ignore your cats. Just because the cats aren't freaking out like humans do, cats manifest their stress in a much more internalized way.
So you can spray pheromones around. Is
that what you're saying? Yeah. The stuff comes in little spray canisters. It also comes in a self-releasing thing that you can plug into the wall. We have one in the clinic to make cats feel a little less stressed when they go to the vet.
Can I get one of those for me?
You know, they probably sell them.
Now, you did say to watch litter box activity, because you said that cats, which I was surprised to learn, can get cystitis and urinary tract infections from stress.
A lot of this came out of the holistic group. I tend to try to keep in touch with all the different camps out there to understand what's being said in the veterinary world. And many holistic vets associate urinary tract infections with stress. And there's not really a scientific way to prove it, but I do see it. I see a lot more urinary tract infections during storm season. So watch your cat's litter box usage. If she starts urinating places other than the litter box, that's often a behavioral sign of stress.
Right. Okay, so...
Well, let's get back to the storms.
And dogs.
Yeah. I used to have a Doberman, the first crack of thunder, and he'd be heading for the bathtub.
Right, which was a good spot. It was a great spot for him, and it's actually a very interesting reason behind that. When a storm's coming... The electromagnetic ionization of the sky somehow changes.
And barometric pressure probably.
Right, too. Right. Yeah. Animals sense this, and putting themselves in a bathtub actually creates a bit of a safe zone for them. They actually find comfort there.
You couldn't get them in there if there was water involved.
No, exactly. I think a lot of it, too, is simply the fact that dogs are, by nature, den animals, and they're looking for a closed space, somewhere that has sides and ideally a roof. And we can actually use that behavior by creating a safe spot for our dogs by putting a crate inside a closet. And what happens is all the hung-up clothes buffer the noise. It's actually the quietest place in the house to be. And they actually have a sense of comfort and peace by going into what you've basically created, which is a den.
Well, isn't that where we're supposed to go in the event of a hurricane?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, my veterinary education was Illinois, one of the tornado states, and that's where you were supposed to go whenever a storm blew up. It was an internal closet.
Right.
Close the door and wait for the sound of the train to pass and hope that the house was still standing when it left.
So when should people administer medicine, like tranquilizers or, I mean, I know of people that give, I don't know if it's Xanax or Valium or something to their animals for
That's an actually very, very valuable question. For years, every time hurricane season would roll by or fireworks season, vets would be approached for a sedative. Usually the most common sedative is something called acepromazine.
Right.
The problem with that is it doesn't actually make them feel any better. It just quietens them down, which is great for us because now you've got a sleepy, terrified pet. But the better way to go is to look for something that helps them feel better and helps them manage their stress more appropriately. The problem there is that this is not a cause and effect medicine. You can't just pop a pill and poof, your dog feels better. It usually takes a couple of weeks for the medicine to kick in. And you really have to do some kind of behavioral training in conjunction with that medicine for them to positively respond to it. And never, never, never give human medicine direct to a dog without somebody telling you what the dose is.
Well,
because you overdose the dog. Case in point, Prozac. Yes, in theory, there is a dose for Prozac for dogs, but it's nothing like the human dose. You could actually really hurt your pet by winging it. And it can take 2 weeks for something like Prozac to kick in.
Like it does for humans.
Yeah. So when people knock down my door July 3rd for medicine for their dog for fireworks day, it's a toughie because there isn't really anything that's going to work effectively within 24 hours.
Well, what about the ACE? Doesn't that work effectively?
It quietens them down. So if the mission is to get them through this awful event without tearing themselves or their environment apart, ACE will get them through it. But it's just not a great solution because you're artificially getting them through it, and now you've got a dog that's just went through a terrifying experience without doing anything about it internally, which means next time another similar event comes along, they're going to be even more afraid because now they've got the memory of having gone through an experience in a compromised state. You follow? Mm-hmm.
Our number, 1-800-743-9576. It's Topical Currents at your service. And we're talking about pet and pet care, and especially in relationship to our storm season, including hurricane. Adele
was going to, I think, add something there.
Yeah.
Were you?
Oh, actually,
we have the 4th of July coming up, so you just have one bad night.
Yeah.
Now that we have the doctor in the house, I've seen with a lot of my clients, a combination of melatonin and L-theanine mm-hmm. has worked rather well. Theanine to kind of calm the nerves. Mm-hmm. The melatonin does get them a little sleepy. Using the 5 to 10 milligrams, usually a minimum of 5 mLs medium-sized dog. So what do you suggest on that? It's worked in some cases. The only thing is it's very short-lived, so they have to apply like every 2.5 to 3 hours.
And that actually is useful with regard to the ACE, too. Anything you give to a dog has a period of effectiveness. So the glitch there with, for example, the melatonin is our storms tend to crop about 3 o'clock. Most of us are at work. So let's say, typical owner, you're leaving home at 8 or 7 to get to work, and you know it's storm season, so you want to give your dog a pill to get through it. So you give them some melatonin. It's going to be gone by lunchtime. You give them an ACE. At best, ACE is going to kick in for about 8 hours. You left home at 7. So again, the pill's wearing off, and then suddenly the thunderstorms come. So that's why you really need something that's going to be a 12-hour or 24-hour drug.
Okay. All right. So why don't we actually take our break now? We have calls coming in, 1-800-743-9576. Questions about your pets, 4th of July, hurricane season, we'll get to thunderstorms, 1-800-743-9576, radio@WLRN.org.
Past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke, and dog trainer and behaviorist Adele Mietis. Adele runs the Canine Advisors. Dr. Kupke heads the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall. Do you want to go right to phones, or do you have
or
an email?
Let me go to right to the email. Natalie, what is the best and healthiest way to care and maintain for a dog's dental health on a regular basis? What are the various options? What do you recommend overall? I've read that federal laws only require a small percentage of packaged and processed food to be digestible or nutritious, that the majority of the pet food industry is wholly unregulated. Because of this, I cook fresh meat and some vegetables for my dog regularly since I've had her. Have you noticed a difference, an improved difference in dental health and dog's breath from dogs that are fed fresh cooked food versus processed packaged food?
Okay. Best way to handle dental health in dogs, daily brushing is the best way. Daily brushing. You asked me the best
flossing?
Way.
Flossing?
The best way. Hardly anybody does daily brushing, but daily brushing helps. That being said, daily brushing in us, I still need my teeth cleaned every 6 months. So it's not a guarantee way to maintain an animal's health, dental health to be perfect. In clinical experience, hard food leads to better dental health than soft food, irrespective of whether that is cooked or canned. So no, I haven't seen better dental health in dogs that have had a cooked diet.
Okay.
I would say that you need to look at dogs differently. Generally, large breed dogs have better dental health than small breed dogs. I've seen a 6-year-old black lab who has never needed a dental clean in his life, and I see 1 to 2-year-old Yorkshire Terriers who are losing teeth. So there's that variability to consider.
Okay.
But the daily brushing, never use human toothpaste. There's a product called canine enzymatic toothpaste. It's the only one out there I find that really works.
I just was with a friend up north who has a cat who has this, I don't know what it's called, that he brushes his teeth with, and he loves it. He eats it. He puts it on his teeth.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. Do you know what that is?
I suspect it's the CET because there are various flavors there, and dogs do love it. They really do. CET, canine enzymatic toothpaste.
Okay.
It's available all over the places. And a quick lateral leap, too, regarding the diet question. If you're going to cook for a dog, you must make sure you supplement with vitamins, because it's very, very hard to create a complete and balanced diet by the seat of your pants. You need a veterinary nutritionist to really design one.
Okay. Mm.
Let's take a call or two. We've got Pat in Oakland Park. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I just recently heard about this new Purina Bright Minds food that's supposed to be good for your pet that's over 7 years old. It fixes their mind. It's got MCTs, medium, what is it called? Medium chain triglycerides in it. Is this likely to be a good thing?
Can humans take it?
Yeah, really. I've heard of MCTs for humans, but I don't remember what I heard about them.
Ma'am, this is Adele here. So there's a lot of marketing that goes on in the whole canine nutrition industry, and just looking at a bag saying this is better for your dog's mind, this one's better for huskies, and this one's better for German shepherds, is really, really ridiculous. You want to go ahead and look at the ingredients. We're not here to talk about brands, but it's very hard to find anything good from Purina. But we're not here about basically to be able to go through everything in detail, but you want to look at the ingredients, and you just want to make sure that there's a solid protein up front. There's no byproducts, no BHA, no BHT, no corn, no soy.
No byproducts.
No gluten meal.
Yeah.
That's very important. So you just look at those ingredients, make sure none of that's there. And then whenever there's a supplement in some sort of dog food, it's generally trace amounts. So dog foods and treats that bring like chondroitin, for example, it's a trace amount. You can get a good chondroitin supplement that's going to give way more than that, and you don't have to worry about paying more for that food.
Well, our medium chain triglycerides, if you gave them a supplement, would that improve their mind and make them happier?
I don't know of any research to that effect, doctor.
Haven't read anything to that effect. I know that there's some amazing studies about omega-3s relating to skin health and joint health, but I will certainly look that up. But certainly, when you're looking at diet for a senior dog especially, there's usually other issues that are important: kidney health, liver health, urological health. And you really need to discuss that with your veterinarian to get the diet that's right for your pet.
And we'll move along to Deerfield Beach. This is Dane. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to confirm the whole idea of cats getting urinary tract infections from anxiety. My cat, for the first, 4 or 5 years of her life that I would take her to the vet for her annual visit, she would come back and shortly thereafter have a urinary tract infection. And then, the doctor would give me antibiotics. So, over the phone, recommend the antibiotics. We'd get them. We'd start, forcing them down her throat like they're supposed to do, which is stressful for the cat even more. Then lab work would come back afterwards, and they'd say, well, there's not bacteria there, so it's not, a bacterial infection. It must be anxiety. And then they would prescribe basically like a antidepressant or sedative. We'd give that to the cat, and right after that, the urinary tract infection would go away. And this happened only on the visits to the vet, because they would get so stressed out about going to the vet. So I stopped taking her to the vet. I got a mobile vet to come to the house, and since then, no more problems.
Well, the glitch you have there is that I know some cats will get very stressed out with a stranger coming to the home. So
yeah, but she hasn't, luckily.
I have staff with kids, and the hell that they go through bringing their kids to the pediatrician, I think that there's a certain degree of, unfortunately, some tough love to make sure a pet's medical needs are looked after correctly. I'd be interested to see if there was an underlying cause to your kitty's urinary tract infections that's not related to stress, but I would say stress can cause cortisol release, which can cause immunosuppression, which can mean that things that you might have normally overcome, you're susceptible to. And I think that's where your urinary tract infection and stress relationship come. I think it's more to do with the cortisol release associated with stress response that lowers your immunity, and you catch stuff that you'd otherwise have thought.
Well, Dane, I understand, because I can't get my cat to the vet either. So.
Well, I mean, the thing is, we as soon as we, they told us maybe it wasn't a liquid in her diet, so we supplemented her hard dry food with wet food, and, we did everything. But again, it only occurred during the vet visits. by the time, like about the fifth year in, I decided, you know, look, this can't, you know, it would cost like $1,000 by the time the whole process is done. If you add the vet visit and then the urinary tract infection medicine and then, you know, the revisits and then the anti-anxiety medication. So by the time I was done, I was like, look, I'm just not taking her to that vet. Got a mobile vet to come to the house. She still gets her regular shots, her regular checkups, her Revolution, and yet she has no longer had another urinary tract infection. Hmm.
Now, the other thing, too, is that there is a link between untreated dental disease and urinary tract infection. So that's something else to look at, is make sure your kitty gets her teeth cleaned regularly.
And next up, we have Bob. He's in Coral Gables. Thanks for your patience. Hi.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the show. I wanted to ask the vets whether they know of any patients using the vest that's being sold for lightning storms to calm dogs down.
Yes.
I'm not mentioning brand names, but
there is a vest, and actually that was on my notes to bring up at some point. The concept behind it, if you've ever watched the movie Temple Grandin discovered that she could self-soothe by wrapping herself in a towel tightly or a blanket tightly. And there are various companies that have created a similar swaddling type Velcro and cotton type
the thunder
suit.
Shirt.
Well, okay, yeah. There you go.
Okay, we're not supposed to mention names, right?
But yes, exactly.
We can mention anything we
yeah,
want.
Yeah,
And in the same spirit, there's something called the Storm Defender Cape that has a lining that claims to diffuse those nasty electrical charges I talked about earlier. So there are products out there. Do all of them work all the time? No. But some of them work, and some dogs sometimes. And it's one of these things where you really need to work with someone who's going to address your individual pet's individual needs. And that's where a trainer comes in, veterinarian, to make sure that everything is good. It did help my dog. So okay. There's one.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. We have an emailer. Pat has a Wheaton Terrier, 14 years old, knows every storm that's coming, tried medicine at one point, made her drowsy, didn't like the result, nor did the dog. She hasn't tried the thunder jackets for dogs. Any thoughts? Well, I guess it's what you're saying, that you have to
create a safe place for your dog. Most importantly, a safe place for your dog. Crate in the wardrobe, closet, cover in three sides, put lots of toys in there, give them something to go to in the presence of stress. And the other thing, too, is just because one medicine didn't work, there are other medicines out there, some with less drowsy side effects. So I wouldn't give up hope. It's just a problem that needs to be worked.
1-800-743-9576. Next up, it's Chad in Fort Lauderdale. Hi.
Hi. My question relates to medications for anxiety. I was recently on vacation and took my service dog, who was having some anxiety from the long car drive, to a veterinarian that I wasn't familiar with. And she prescribed a tricyclic antidepressant. And my dog has the MDR1 mutation, and she ended up overdosing him, and he went into serotonin syndrome. Mm. And we had to find an emergency veterinarian literally in the middle of nowhere to treat that. Mm-hmm. And my concern is he has mild anxiety when we have storms, and he can always tell when they're coming. And I put his thunder shirt on, and that helps. But we were looking for something to work with behavior modification. And I'm afraid to give him any tricyclics now because of the serotonin syndrome and the MDR1, the multi-drug-resistant mutation that he has. Do you have any suggestions on what route we might go? Because my vet suggested plain old Xanax.
What breed is your dog with the MDR1?
He's a Catahoula mix.
There you go. Herding dog. In my experience, herding dogs are probably the most amenable to professional training. This is a great opportunity to use that natural drive to please you to get him through these things. And this is where people have found that if you do something fun, an exercise that involves working with them in a way that stimulates their natural dog behavior, dogs are kind of like men. We can only think of one thing at a time. And if you get them to reassociate a storm with playtime or work time, a hula hoop, fetch, search and rescue, all sorts of little games, you can actually redirect that herding dog mentality towards a more constructive mindset. And that, personally, that's how I would attack this thing first.
Yeah, that's
Thank
very good
very
advice.
Much.
Yes.
And just as a side note, for dental health, I use cut elk antlers, and they work amazingly.
Well, you've got to be careful with what you give your dog to chew. You have to look at the size of the dog and make sure that they're not breaking off fragments of these items and swallowing and potentially choking on them. So, for example, a Catahoula probably would work with elk antlers. Yorkshire Terrier or Maltese would not.
Okay, we move along. Topical Currents at your service. Lewis, Fort Lauderdale. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a lovely, very caring 8-year-old mixed dog, Vishla, with pit bull. And he's very loving. And unfortunately, my wife is going through the Alzheimer's disease thing. So she gets at times very, very yelling, and he cannot take that. He goes and hides and stays away from my wife, and I think he's become afraid of my wife. But he loves her, and she loves her. So, I guess the advice would be what to do with a dog, and what us to do to better the situation.
Hello, we actually have dealt with a few of those cases. Most recently in Fort Lauderdale, we had a boxer. Had to take care and be a service dog for an Alzheimer's patient. The daughter, it was just her and her dad. And when the dad would get loud, one of the things we did was we taught the boxer to reassociate what that means. And that means you go get a family member. So it gives the dog a specific job. It also allows, when that family member comes in, they can separate the dog from the individual and be more with the individual. And the individual calms down, then the dog is back next to them. In this particular case, a gentleman was able to go through a couple of locks and go out the front door. And she lost him for a while, and she was very scared. But we taught this dog to never, ever allow this gentleman to move out of the house, or if she's in a restaurant, she had to use a bathroom, the dog will start barking, and he wore a vest that says, if I'm barking, call my owner, you know. So long story, there's a number of different ways that the dog can not only be perhaps of more service to your wife, but through that process, get him over the fear of her outbursts.
Hey, there's one opportunity there. It's just my wife, two dogs, and a cat, and myself. So what do I do? I try to calm him down and try to calm her down as well, but he just runs upstairs and hides.
Yeah, at a time that the dog is all very scared and all that, if you continue harboring that kind of behavior in him, he's going to go deeper into being more scared. But as a behaviorist, I'm able to help out, point out some of the things that you could be doing. Start teaching the dog certain little tasks, like find mommy, let's say, or find daddy. And then the dog will have to go and find each individual, and you guys would hide in closets and things like that. So we make it fun, and then the dog would then actually have a purpose. When she starts doing that, the dog knows, okay, that triggers this. So then he goes into doing what he's supposed to do, call another family member like yourself.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Okay, Adele, here's one. I have a year and a half rat terrier who was a rescued stray. He's frightened of any dog larger than himself. He'll snarl and growl with hackles raised whenever he sees a larger dog. It inevitably causes the other dog to bark back. Recently, he was attacked by two labs in our neighborhood who got loose. He got away. He's fine, but I fear this has made the situation worse. Is there any way to help him get rid of his fear or keep him from snarling and barking?
Yes. When we have a situation like this, first thing we need to do is assess the dog, and we need to see to what level these experiences have affected this dog. In most cases, if the dog sees some upfront structure and leadership from the handler, the dog is more likely to turn to us for some sort of support when they're approached by another dog. We also condition them that they're not to focus so much on another dog. So it's a process of working through a few basics to begin with, and then being able to reintroduce that dog to some dogs. Like I have some of the dogs that I use myself, I know are good with every single dog, very low key, low energy.
Okay.
So we have positive associations and that's really what we need to do. Dogs learn through a process of association of patterns. So basically what we need to do is recreate some other patterns in that dog's life going forward that end up with a positive outcome while being around other dogs.
Our number, 1-800-743-9576. We have some lines open. 1-800-743-9576. 9576. Next up, it's Lori in Hollywood. Hey there.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thanks so much for taking my call. I believe this one is probably for Dr. Kupke.
Mm-hmm.
I have two male cats in the house, and this past winter, I took in another stray, a long hair who was declawed and homeless in the middle of downtown Fort Lauderdale. She's a very sweet girl, Bronwyn, and she came in with fleas, which I try to take care of these maladies with more natural remedies. I had to acquiesce. I had to use some of the nasty commercial stuff behind the shoulder blades. I got most of them away. I have diatomaceous earth. I have a spray clove remedy. And just when I think I have most of them gone, it looks like there's a recurrence. It looks like there's like little teeny mite-like things, which might or might not be fleas. I don't know what they are. And then to compound it, it looks as though there's a reaction. Her skin, very delicate, gets these little pimples beneath the surface, not just around the jaw area, but down the spine. And again, I try to do things as naturally as possible. There's an organic pet shop in Fort Lauderdale called Augie's Doggies, but I just don't want to see her suffering.
Doctor, your advice?
Well, what you're describing is a condition called feline miliary dermatitis. It's an allergic reaction. So that's what the little bumps are under the skin with the scabs.
Right.
The problem with tackling a flea problem is that you can't fix it quickly. Fleas have a life cycle, kind of like an ant: eggs, larva, pupae, adult.
Yep.
Nothing kills the eggs, nothing kills the pupae, and the pupae can stay put in their environment for up to 14 months. So if you've got fleas in the house, then you need to get somebody professional to treat your house regularly for more than 1 year. Otherwise, the fleas will come back inevitably. The other thing is you have to be diligent about what kind of behind the shoulder blade product you use. Some are better than others. In my experience, sorry about the product shout out, but I find that Revolution is the best of the best because it takes care of ear mites, internal parasites, and fleas. And so far, I'm still very comfortable with using that. I'm not very comfortable with some of the over-the-counter products that are out there. So some of them I find dogs and cats find very irritating. Some of them just don't work. So you have to get them onto something regular to deal with the fleas monthly. And there we have various veterinary anti-itch solutions for you. It's probably better to talk about that direct, but there are a lot of options out there to reduce itching and take care of the problem.
With the rainy season coming up, can you go ahead of the curve a little bit and be prepared?
Oh, totally, totally. I would say that certainly all dogs should be on a monthly flea preventative. There's actually an excellent oral flea preventative out there now.
What's that called?
Called NexGard, and that's a very, very nice, effective product. Takes care of fleas and ticks, and it's in a chewy tablet, so dogs are very, very happy taking it. My dog snarfed that thing down like it was a candy. So basically, I do the HeartGard NexGard once a month, and that seems to work really, really well. So I've not seen fleas in my dogs for years.
You would recommend that over Comfortis or Trifecta?
Comfortis is the active ingredient in Trifexis, and it's very good for fleas, but it doesn't do a thing for ticks. So it's not labeled for ticks. So because we're seeing, this year we're seeing, I think, a hotter summer, a longer summer, much more humid. And ticks love that kind of weather. So for the first time in my practice life, I'm seeing ticks
in
dogs.
Are they prevalent in South Florida?
In ticks? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, horrendous. We used to be swamp a few decades ago, and they remember.
Okay.
Next caller, we've got Katie in Miami. Hi, Katie.
Hi. I'm calling kind of as a last-ditch effort for my cat here. I have a 9-year-old indoor cat, Charlie, who's been displaying hyperthesia-like symptoms for about the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's on amitriptyline, and it hasn't really made much of a difference. It gets worse. It's usually only at night. It starts with growling, and then the growling increases, and he's staring at his tail, and then he just makes this horrific noise, like a scream, and attacks or tries to get to his tail. not as a game. It's definitely, he's drawn blood before from himself.
Sure.
However, the part I'm confused about is if it is hyperthesia, it's very minimal skin twitches or any like spasms that we see.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be his tail is the main target, and it's really and truly only at night. And then when it gets at its worst, it'll be all day long. And that's pretty much it. I don't know if what you think it could be and what his options are.
Well, amitriptyline is just but one of many, many medicines that are available for this. Feline hyperseizure syndromes, basically, it's a neurological disorder where they act like they're being eaten alive by allergies, and there's no evidence of allergies. But you need to make sure your kitty is allergy-free. Make sure that there isn't a component of allergy to his behavior. But basically, anti-seizure medications and certain other medicines, gabapentin, phenobarbital, Prozac, all these things are have been used for this condition. But you really need to work out a program of diagnostic information with your veterinarian and make sure that if the amitriptyline isn't enough, that they add something.
Okay. Adele?
Yes.
Obolova has a six-month-old Saluki puppy who has an unfortunate habit of eating other dogs' poop. Is there anything we can do to make him stop?
Well, there's a number of things that we generally suggest is we want to look at his current dogs, the Saluki's diet. And you know, if that diet, for example, is lacking in some minerals, oftentimes phosphorus, zinc, a lot of times they'll find it in poop. And so they'll try to eat it. So one of the first things to do is look at that dog's diet. The other thing is you want to see if there's any behavioral to it. Like, for example, that Saluki is housebroken, but there's another dog in the household that perhaps is not or is doing so. A lot of times they'll actually eat it to hide it. So we have to see if there's some behavioral component to that. The first thing I would suggest, though, is make sure that the dog is healthy enough and getting proper nutrition through its own food. There are a number of things such as pumpkin seeds and there's a number of different spices that have been used to put even dried pineapple as well in the food to try to create some sort of acidic effect to not have them want to eat it anymore. So that has also been effective. And there are some powders out there, but for the most part have made the dogs a bit runny with their poop. So generally we'd look at what the dog's current nutrition is. See if there's anything we can change about the nutrition plan and then move forward into some behavioral work if indeed that's what it is.
Topical Currents, at your service, pet care. Cheryl and Davey, you're next. Hi.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a 14-year-old Lhasa that has the beginning of cataracts, and I was wondering if you could comment on the serums that are now available to dissolve them, the eye drops.
I don't know of any that will dissolve cataracts. The problem is cataracts affect the lens of the eye, which is behind the surface skin of the eye. The surface skin of the eye, the thing you put your contact lens on top of, is the cornea. And so anything you put on top of the eye isn't going to enter the eye. So nothing, I wouldn't waste money on anything that claims to remove a cataract by putting it on top of the eye. The only thing that solves a cataract, unfortunately, is actually removing it, and that's done by a board-certified veterinary ophthalmologist.
Okay, sorry. Thank you.
All right, we're at your service. Pet care is the subject. A short break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Tuesday's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman at your service with Dr. Ian Kupke from Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Mieres from Canine Advisors. And we just a note here, we have callers and we have lots of emailers and we're going to get to as many as we can. But we want to make some more points, especially with 4th of July and hurricane season around the corner. So.
Well, the thing I wanted to stress was that this phobia of storms, fireworks, etc., tends to reach its peak between 3 and 4 years of age. So I thought that was very important, because if you've got a young dog and you think, phew, I'm not one of those people, it might be because your dog hasn't moved into that phase of their life yet. And the other was a very interesting point raised by a caller earlier about this MDR1 thing that I kind of rushed past. MDR stands for multidrug sensitivity in dogs. It's a genetic anomaly associated with certain herding breeds. And it's something to bear in mind before you start investing in mood-altering substances, like, unfortunately, the lady's experience. So if you have a herding breed of dog, a dog that used to herd sheep or cattle for a living, then it's worth bringing up before you start experimenting with different mood-altering drugs.
Okay. This is a 4-year-old, 68-pound pit mix, extreme noise anxiety, but he has epilepsy. So they've tried the thunder shirt. They didn't see much improvement. Vet gave them Xanax samples. But with him having epilepsy, we're worried about giving him meds. Mm. His anxiety is so intense, we worry about him having a stroke. This is from Ashley, as the vet has advised. He loves his crate, but when storms or fireworks start, there's no calming him.
Well, the first question is, what meds is the dog on for epilepsy? Because okay. I suspect that should be the primary thing to focus on, is controlling the epileptic seizures. And you may find that a nice side effect of the epileptic drugs is to modify his anxiety levels.
Okay.
And back to the phones. Joanne in Boca. Hi there.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good.
Thank you so much. I have a friend who has two dogs, one that she'd had for a while and another one that she recently. Are you there?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
One that she recently purchased at a store, and it's a boutique dog. Mm-hmm. And the dog is very cuddly, and this is what she likes. And in the morning, she takes the dog out, and he performs. And then when she brings him back in, then he defecates all over the house, along with other mischievous little things, like rolling the toilet tissue paper off and so I'm wondering whether this is something that could be modified by a dog trainer.
It definitely can be modified, Joanne. You know why the dog is doing that?
No, I don't.
Because he can.
Oh, yeah, so, that's for sure.
So, Joanne, one of the basic elemental steps in resolving the housebreaking is not giving the dog the opportunity to get in trouble for at least 10 days in a row. So that's a real basic part of the housebreaking, and that's really one of the areas that you.
So he goes
with.
A little bit outside, then comes back in, and lets
and
go again.
House.
Is that
yeah.
what you're saying?
All over the house, yeah.
Yeah, you would need to have him either on a leash or either in a crate or some sort of smaller living environment where he does not feel comfortable defecating there. And so you'd want to have them there or on a leash for 10 days in a row. And there's a couple other things that you'd add to that. Make sure that you take the dog out. Don't just let the dog go out and expect to know that the dog did something if he didn't.
No, she's been doing that. She actually goes out with him.
Well, that's good. And then also keeping her on a feeding schedule, on a regular feeding schedule. Put the food down and take it up.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And... excuse me. We have Daniela in Miami. Hi, Daniela.
Hi, yes. I'm calling because I have a miniature dash hound about 11 years old.
Oh, lovely.
Yes, and about a year and a half ago, he began obsessively licking the floor, and he doesn't stop, and there's nothing I can do to stop him. I've tried to exercise him more. I've tried to get upset with him, and there's just basically no stopping the obsessive licking. So to see if you had any advice.
Is it only in a certain area of the floor?
No, it's all over. So it's on wood floor, tile floor, anywhere. Thankfully, I don't have rug.
Okay. A lot of times, I mean, it sounds like some sort of neurotic behavior. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, it comes about at certain times. I don't imagine the dog does it 24/7. There may be times that he does it more than other times.
Yes, he mostly does it when I am present. When I'm not there, he doesn't do it. So it's when I'm present, and particularly if I have someone else over and I'm not giving him my complete.
So he gets a reaction.
How do you know he doesn't? How do you know he doesn't do it when you're not there?
Because I've had my fiance at home, and he won't do it while they're there alone.
Oh, it's just you.
Yes.
Oh.
Got
I've
it.
Taken him to other people's houses for dog sitting, and he doesn't do it either.
Okay, so it seems like he is getting some sort of anxiety from either having you around or having you around and then leave, or having you around with other people. I'd have to test a little bit more to see exactly where we're at with that. Mm-hmm. But it's suggestive to me that the dog may be experiencing certain anxiety. He's manifesting it by licking the floor.
Okay, and there is tests that can be run for that then?
More behavioral tests, if you will, kind of to find the different variables as so that we can really hone in on what may be the cause, and that way we know how to move about to resolve it.
Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
And will you be providing your information online?
Yes, okay. Here online and here on the show as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Marcia uses, okay, let's see if I can say this, herbal Shen Calmer to calm her cat. Works wonderfully. Distributed by Dr. Z's Jingtang Herbal from Redick, Florida, 32686, to vets only. Are you
really
familiar with it?
Never heard of it.
All right, I'm going to forward this to you.
I have to wonder whether it's catnip, but
yeah, right.
Or perhaps something else.
Okay. Well,
take another email.
Okay, yeah. Let's do another email. And I'm going to forward that one. And in fact, well, if we don't get to all your emails, Dr. Kupke and Adele are kind enough for me to forward them to them, and they will get to you at some point. So don't give up. Take heart. You will get your questions answered.
If I could throw in something real quick, the last caller and the herding breed dog earlier. Remember that dogs are pets, but they used to be working animals, and they had jobs, and they had things to do, and that means that we bred them for centuries with a mind and a need to get rid of that energy. And this is why behavior is so important, because you've got to give them an outlet. And a lot of this aberrant behavior is basically dogs that have nothing better to do. And so wouldn't we get a little crazy if we were cooped up in the house all the time with nothing?
Yeah.
Or in a purse.
And that's why you'll see a growing body of dog vets in particular are emphasizing behavior and training, because if you don't give our dogs something to do, they'll find something to do.
Okay, here's two indoor cats. Our daughter at the moment has two medium-sized dogs similar to Labs. Pretty big. Our daughter would like to move back with us. We love her dogs. How do we introduce the dogs to our house with our two cats? We have 6 months to solve the problem.
Well, the good thing is there's some time to work through the acclimation, introduction, and so forth. I'd want to identify between the two dogs which dog is more of, let's say, the leader between the two dogs. One of those dogs looks up more to the other dog than the other. So that'd be the first thing I'd want us to find. Then I'd like to get that dog and then work with that dog individually and the kitties. The other thing is, when we're working with cats, we don't know if this is a cat we need to have in a carrier, and we don't want to stress the cat out in the carrier. Recently I worked with in this household where a pit bull had to get used to a number of different cats with different totally personalities, and it worked out really, really well, because these cats were not afraid. There was another dog in the household that was about the size of the pit bull, but a shepherd mix, and the cats were not afraid of this dog at all. So these cats were very cooperative. So it always depends on how cooperative the cats are in meeting the dog and what drive we're working with that dog. But in most cases, it's very possible.
And they have 6 months introduce them slowly.
Certainly.
Okay, we're really short on time. Lacey in Pompano, hi.
Hi. Can you hear?
Yeah, Lacey.
Hi, yes. I have a pit bull mix that I rescued about 5 years ago, and they had warned me that she was very high energy. We walk her every day. I take her out on the skateboard. But for some reason, with me in particular, she's very aggressive towards other dogs. And I had a bad leash once, and she got off the leash and attacked another dog. that was not doing anything. It was actually walking away from her.
Adele, we're short on time. Can you answer what?
Sure. In these situations, just real quick, you got to show the dog a lot more leadership on a daily basis before you even go for that walk. There's also a number of little techniques that we can use before the distraction is there to get the dog accustomed to following certain cues, like a shuffle of your feet or a little sound that you may make as you turn around and dog comes and gets praise. So there's a number of different ways that we can help with that. It is a very resolvable behavior.
Okay, so that's all we have time for. We will forward the emails. Okay, Dr. Ian Kupke, owner, lead practitioner of Sable Chase Animal Clinic, his email is askdrk@sableanimalclinic.com. And Canine Advisors is where Adele Mieres is. That's canineadvisors.com. Email adele@canineadvisors.com. And sorry to everyone we couldn't get to. Thanks,
we
Adele
tried.
And Dr. Kupke.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks for tuning in to At Your Service. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. As always, we have free audio archives and downloads at our new website, WLRN.org.
Just want to say our new website's still under construction a little, so the archives aren't there quite yet.
And more information with links and photos to the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tune in tomorrow when we visit with Netta Ulibi, the familiar voice of NPR's Arts Desk. We'll talk about her reports on art, film, music, TV, and literature, and much more. Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.